This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Being better at that, understanding that, we have many more games left after that. Been able to, be one, be a family, and move on from that, and have the right leaders, and which we do. We have the right guys to do, things like that, which is bounce back from something like that. We got to do it this week.
It'd be better, just mean move on quicker?
Yeah, we gotta be better and move on quicker. We gotta have that 24-hour period, and from there move on.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
With you all the way until 9 o'clock tonight, Judson Richards with you. That voice you just heard there was Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times. I thought Patrick did a great job in that questioning with Caleb Williams, and I thought Caleb was brutally honest. Patrick joins us now on 670 The Score. Patrick, great to talk to you. Did you think that the Bears let the Hail Mary game beat them twice, and did Caleb Williams somewhat allude to it there?
Yeah, I think they did. I think they said the right things during the week about turning the page, but, that's really hard to do. And, I'll tell you this. I thought the Cardinals would win. I don't think anybody in the world believes that the Cardinals are a 20-point favorite over the Bears, or that they're 20 points better than the Bears. And, there are some explanations for it with, there were some injuries. You had Montez Sweat not playing. But I think the most logical conclusion you can draw is that the Bears just weren't ready to play 7 days after they gave up that Hail Mary.
Patrick, bye weeks aren't supposed to go like this, right? You win three, and then you get a break, right? You get to enjoy London a little bit. You play perhaps your best game. Certainly was Caleb Williams' best game. I think 72% completion percentage over those three games. What happened during the bye week where we saw the way that they showed up against the Commanders? Again, they could have won that game, but it certainly doesn't mean that they played well. And then they laid an egg against Arizona. What happened after the bye week?
It's a great question. You almost wish in retrospect that they wouldn't have had it.
And that I had that thought. Had
yeah. Yeah. I'll say this. They led for 25 seconds in Washington, and that was the 25 seconds before the Hail Mary. So, we can sit there and talk about the ugly ending and about how, if it weren't for Tyreek Stevenson, maybe the Bears would be sitting here with one more win. But the Bears didn't play well enough to win that game either. So you're right. It is a big picture issue that not only has the team seemed to be going backwards, but Caleb Williams has been going backwards. In the last 2 weeks, Caleb Williams has got the worst passer rating of any starting quarterback in football. That's not acceptable, even for somebody playing his first season.
Do you think more of that is on him or what's happening around him?
Yes. Is that an acceptable answer? I think both. I think that he has missed a lot of throws in the last 2 weeks. You could go back, look at the game against the Commanders, and, there were some balls he threw that were, multiple feet, either over somebody's head or to their left or right. At the time, I was willing to give him a little bit of grace. You're going home to play in front of your hometown. Against the number two pick in the draft, you wouldn't blame him for being nervous. But he came out and he was inaccurate again against the Cardinals. And so that's on him. Now, is he being put in position to succeed? I think there's a very strong argument to be made that he isn't. I mean, you look at the fact that Cole Kmet didn't have any targets last week, that Gerald Everett had one. I think in the first six games that Caleb played, he averaged 10 completions per game to either tight ends or running backs. And in the last two, he's averaged five. I mean, that tells me that he's not taking the easy throws and that the Bears aren't doing a good enough job of presenting those easy throws to him as something that he's got to do. There's no question that he wants to go for the home run ball a lot. But, when he's been at his best this season, it's been when he has settled for, the 6 yards, let your skill positions do the work, and go out and play second and four. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Patrick Finley, Chicago Sun-Times on the beat of the Bears. Patrick, you mentioned that he left a lot of throws open or missed a lot of throws against the Cardinals. What if I told you that I thought that the wide receiver room had a worse game than Caleb Williams did? Would you push back?
I wouldn't push back. I mean, I think there's a case to be made that, you know, we thought that the wide receiver room they had would be the absolute, no question about it, strength of their team. And I don't think that's been the case yet. You know, DJ Moore is not the weapon that he was last year. And there are lots of different reasons for it. And it's I'm not saying it's DJ's fault necessarily, but, you know, he and Justin Fields had a better connection than he and Caleb Williams had. And that's not good. I really like Keenan Allen on third and five. I think, you know, there's nobody in the league I'd rather have if you just need a short route run and the ball caught. But, you know, he needs to be able to do more than that. And, you know, you saw on Sunday, he just stone cold dropped a third down completion. And that is just so not like him. And then you have Adunze, who I think he had his second 100-yard game on Sunday. That's encouraging. But, you know, I don't think anybody gets ready to play the Bears by making sure they shut down Rome Adunze either. So, yeah, it's been bad. And, you know, it needs to get better. And it's not going to get better by throwing the ball to the receivers 50 times either. It's going to get better by having balance both in the run and the pass and in short passes versus long passes.
Where are we on DJ Moore walking off the field in the middle of that scramble by Caleb Williams? Is that a thing? Is that not a thing because he was limping, or did it feel like he somewhat quit on the play as Caleb Williams was killing himself out there to try to move the ball down the field?
It looked to me like he was limping. And, you know, you see that first step he takes, he kind of jumps up and down on his left leg. And, you know, for me watching the film, I thought that he was hurt, and that as long as he was out of bounds, there's nothing good that can happen by you running back in bounds. There really isn't in terms of how the game is officiated. So I don't know that I would have walked that deep onto their bench, but the minute he stepped out and looked to be in a little bit of pain, I think he was okay staying over there. Now he stayed in the game, and I think he ran a deep route on the next play. So you could ask just how hurt he is. But, you know, that one, I'm not in full freak out mode over that one quite yet.
Did the Bears have an offensive identity? Is there anything you can point at? And if not, then why has Shane Waldron not been able to establish anything?
You know, I thought they did for a while. I thought that being able to go no huddle really presented a lot of easy answers for Caleb Williams at the line of scrimmage. It limited what the defenses were able to do. You know, you look back at the Jaguars game and the Rams game before that, and the Bears would just kind of keep the same lineup out there. They'd start off in five wide. Caleb would get a look at what the defense was doing, and then everybody would motion into the formation they wanted to run. I thought that was a really clever way to help Caleb out. And, you know, out of that, you saw DeAndre Swift. You know, there was a month where DeAndre Swift was probably the second or third most accomplished running back in football during that span. You know, you had a strong run game and a impressive short pass game and a quarterback who was seeing the things that he was supposed to see. That's what I thought it was. You know, the last two games have not resembled that at all. And, you know, let's give him a little bit of credit, just a little bit, in that, you know, he hasn't turned the ball over the last two games. I was talking to somebody today, you know, we can all close our eyes and see, you know, some of Justin Fields' mistakes and some of Mitch Trubisky's mistakes and, you know, fumbles when you can't fumble and interceptions when you can't throw interceptions. You know, that goes back to Jay Cutler even. Caleb doesn't have that. The mistakes Caleb has made have been few and far between in terms of turnovers. But, boy, he just needs to be more accurate, and he needs to get the ball out when it needs to be out.
What do you think the plan was for Tyreek Stevenson? You know, watching him during that game, he did not have his helmet on, so it looked like he knew that there was going to be a certain amount of quarters. Perhaps at halftime he was ready to go, but then Terrell Smith got hurt. Do you think that the plan had to change for how long Tyreek Stevenson was going to be out of the game due to injury?
Yeah, I think that Tyreek Stevenson was going to play, I don't know, a quarter of the snaps maybe. I think that they were going to use him kind of the way that Terrell Smith was used the previous week. And then when Terrell got hurt, Tyreek had to go out there. Terrell Smith had a really good quarter or so of football. And I think he's one of the better graded cornerbacks by Pro Football Focus all year, actually. But, you know, the Bears are better with Tyreek Stevenson back in, I think. Wound up playing a lot more than I think the Bears coaching staff was prepared for him to play or wanted him to play or had planned for him to play. But, you know, that's why you don't make him inactive. You know, you give him a helmet on game day because, you know, if something happens, you can't, you know, hang your team out to dry by playing a fourth stringer out there. And something happened and he wound up playing. I thought he played well, and the Bears thought he played well. But, yeah, it wasn't quite the lesson learned via public flogging that a lot of people in Chicago would have wanted.
Why is Nate Davis still on the team? Why is he active?
they're too banged up to do anything else. That's my short answer.
You almost feel like they would just play with four at this point, yet he's active, you know?
10 out of 11. Yeah. You know, he is, even when the Bears had questions about his practice preparedness and his willingness to practice over the last year and a half, it came with the caveat that he's a pretty good game day player. He really is. And, you know, the problem is that he's only comfortable at one guard position. And when you're looking for a backup, you need somebody with versatility, and that's something that Nate just doesn't have. You know, the question, why didn't the Bears just give him away today? I think the answer is probably that it might be irresponsible to give away Nate Davis when you're sitting there with Braxton Jones hurt, with Darnell Wright hurt, with Tevin Jenkins seemingly being hurt and then not hurt and then hurt every game. You've got Ryan Bates coming back to provide a little bit of support, and maybe you can hope that Braxton Jones can make it back this week. But the Bears' offensive line is taking on water, and I think it probably would have done more harm than good to trade Nate today. And, you know, what are you getting for him? You're getting probably a seventh-round pick in 2 years. Like, that's not much.
I found it comical. When he was made inactive, when he was a healthy scratch, and Matt Eberflus complimented him on his professionalism, it's like, this is his dream scenario, right? Like, this, from what I've seen from Nate Davis, there is nothing more that he would want than to get paid and also not have to worry about playing in a football game. I just can't believe that they allowed him to be around this team. And again, they don't show any interest in putting in there, even as much as they continue to be injured at the offensive line. So what should we make of GM Ryan Poles, the offensive line that he built, because I didn't think it was strong to begin with, to now where we are and how unsupportive it is to his rookie quarterback in Caleb Williams?
Yeah, it's not very good. You know, the best version of it was not supposed to be their starting lineup. The best version was when Matt Pryor came in and took Nate Davis's place. And, you know, we can go back to Ryan Bates, too. I believe that when training camp started, the Bears wanted Ryan Bates to be their starting center. Now, he got hurt in camp and was never really quite the same, and that left Coleman Shelton out there. So the competition that they had talked up on the first day of training camp at that position didn't really happen beyond, like, the first 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or so. So, yeah, they've just, you know, they have, I guess the warm bodies they have to put in as backups are a little more reliable than the ones they've had in the previous 2 years, but that's damning with faint praise. You know, and, you know, I even thought this when Ryan Poles was talking about this, the best depth we ever had at the position. Usually at O-line, if you're talking about depth, it's because you don't want to talk about the strength of your starter. And I think that he was saying a lot when he was talking about the room as opposed to the five guys that they're going to put out there.
How would you grade Caleb Williams' season, rookie season so far?
Oh, man. You know, that's tough. From weeks 3 through 6, it was so satisfying to watch him just get better every week. And he got better every week at the things that they talked about him getting better at on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And boy, that was just, there was something really entertaining about it, something really interesting, and something really hopeful about, you know, you say, hey, we want him to, instead of taking deep shots, we need him to throw some short passes over the middle, and then he does it. And then you say, okay, now we need him to run a little bit, and he does that. And boy, that was great. And then he's taken the step back. I'm not ready to dismiss, you know, his rookie season or dismiss him as a prospect one iota. Now, I think he's probably about a B-minus right now. You know, there was a time when he had the best record ever by a number one overall pick, and that was when they were 4-2. He might still have it at 4-4, for all I know.
Right.
And you know, having a 500 record, and I know it feels like the sky is falling here, but I think there are a lot of teams. I was doing this exercise with somebody the other day. Name me, you know, the 20 players in the NFL that you wouldn't trade for Caleb Williams right now. I mean, I think there are a lot of teams that look at the production that he's had, that look at the potential that he has, and that look at the contract that he's on for the next 5 years. And I think, you know, he is one of the most desirable players in the NFL, even after, like I said, having the worst 2 weeks of any quarterback in weeks 8 and 9.
He is the best young foundational piece because of the position that he plays in the entire NFC North, right? I agree with you there. The reason why I feel like this guy is falling a little bit is because they still have to play the NFC North.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got 19 wins between them. No other division of football has their top three teams that have collected 19 wins already, and I think that the Lions are the best teams in the NFL. That's why, to me, it feels like the sky is falling. Also, it feels like that because Olin Krutz said on the postgame show on 670 The Score that the Bears played like a team where it looked like a head coach had lost the locker room. Where do you come out on that?
They've talked all year about being a player-led team. You know, they have eight captains. And they have other guys in that room that are probably upset that they're not captains. I mean, that's how many veterans they have. I think that there are too many professionals in that room to be quitting on a head coach in week nine. I really don't think that that is the case. Now, they're playing so poorly that it looks that way. And that's damning in its own right now, isn't it? But I don't think he's lost it yet. It's just, it's so, the roster that they have this year is just so different than the roster the Bears had the previous two seasons when they were just trying to, you know, coach up some young guys and know, you know, in knowing that they were going to end up with a really good draft pick. You know, now you have these big personalities and these guys who have been other places and, you know, might prefer coaches that did things a different way. And that's just really a different sort of room for Matt Eberflus to have to deal with. I think the best thing you could say about him in his first two seasons was that he kept his locker room together when they lost a lot of football games. Now I think I'm not willing to concede that he's lost them in its entirety, at this point in the season. Now, once we get halfway through this gauntlet that they've got, and if things aren't going well, it might be a different conversation, but I'm not there. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. I was going to say it's really been a theme of the show. What does Matt Eberflus need to do to be back in 2025 the rest of the way?
I think his defense needs to be amazing. Until last week, my argument for Matt Eberflus was that as a head coach, he's an awesome defensive coordinator. And yes, that is mildly insulting. I realize that. But, you know, they had held, even in Washington, they had held the, you know, top scoring offense in football to 12 points until that Hail Mary. Boy, you would take that every day of the week. And, you know, he is good at the thing that he has been good at his whole life. Matt Nagy wasn't. You know, Matt Nagy showed up as a quarterback whisperer and an offensive savant, and we never saw, you know, much of that at all in his tenure here. John Fox, you know, comes from a defensive background. Boy, their defenses were awful when John Fox was here. Mark Trestman came from an offensive background. They had a great offense in his first year, and in his second year, they didn't at all. So give Eberflus this. His area of expertise had, until Sunday, done pretty well this season. And, you know, I think that it needs to be really good the rest of the way to help them win games. And I also think that, you know, the obvious, counterpart to that is that Caleb Williams needs to keep getting better. And, you know, the best case you could probably make for this coaching staff staying intact next year is that if Caleb keeps taking, you know, that step-by-step improvement every week, at the end of the season, you're going to look up and say, why would we change this? You know, even if the record might not be what you want it to be, if you see a quarterback that's on a clear path to something really special, I think it'd be risky to get rid of everybody who helped him get there in his rookie season.
Our guest hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois, Patrick Finley, Chicago Sun-Times on the beat of the Bears. Patrick, I appreciate you. I appreciate your time tonight. Great stuff. Thanks again.
Hey, anytime. Great to be on.
Thanks, Patrick. There he is. You know, interestingly, I was thinking about Ryan Poles and his decision-making, right? Has Ryan Poles ever made a hard decision yet for the Bears? I think he's made some very, very unpopular decisions. First thing he did when he got here was trade Khalil Mack, perhaps, you know, one of the most popular players on the Bears. He had to fire a number of coaches for things that they did in the building. I'm sure that was difficult for him. He's made some good choices. He's made some bad choices. He's made a great choice in that trade with the Carolina Panthers. I just am not convinced that Ryan Poles has had to make the hardest of choice yet. And I guess I'm saying that the hardest choice to make would be firing your head coach. I mean, let's be honest. He didn't really seem to bat an eye at Jim Harbaugh being available. He didn't really consider at all Mike Vrabel, who I think already is a better head coach than Matt Eberflus. He didn't seem to consider Bill Belichick, who's got the greatest resume, as a head coach of all time. One of the reasons why that is, if you know how these family-run businesses work, those two are more like friends than they are just coworkers. So you're talking holiday parties, you're talking birthdays, you're talking your wives are probably friends, your kids may be friends with their kids, right? That's why this becomes such a hard decision to make a coaching change if Ryan Poles does it. But as of now, I just don't think 3 years in, he has had to make an ultimately hard, hard decision. He's made good ones. He's made bad ones, right? Drafting a player is not a hard decision. You just hope to get it right because you got to do it. Changing a head coach, whether in the middle of the season or the end of the season, would be the most difficult decision that he's had to make as of yet. Hey, download the Odyssey app, search for 670 The Score, and tap follow to receive alerts on our Bears coverage. And if you can't get enough, check out the Take the North podcast with Mark Grody and Dan Weider, breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of Sunday's game against the Patriots. Follow Take the North on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Up next, let's go to Texas. San Antonio, that's where the GM meetings are. Will Venable is there. What's being said about Juan Soto, who's a leader in the clubhouse? Also, are the Cubs looking to make a big move this offseason? Bruce Levine will join us on The Score coming up next.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we know that it's always about the players, you know. But, you know, for me, and as I've watched other managers be successful and then sometimes not so successful, it's about the environment that we create for the guys, you know, and really helping them be at their best, and how we set up our days of training, how we give them feedback, you know, just how we communicate with them is just extremely important. And so it will always be about the players, but I just view managing as, you know, the vehicle to help these guys be at their best.
That's new White Sox manager Will Venable. Will was on this morning with Mully and Haw, and also with us now, Score Baseball Insider Bruce Levine. Oh, we'll try to get Bruce back in just a moment. Again, Will Venable, he has been around, right? This, you know, this was one of those, I've got to say, as the White Sox embarked on looking for a new manager, you had to wonder what would be the caliber of the manager of a team coming off of 121 wins. Chris Getz somewhat acknowledging they don't plan on spending a lot of money, and even if you go a little bit higher, the way that Jerry Reinsdorf seems to operate his business, especially today. But I gotta say, I feel like they found a good one in Will Venable. I don't think it's, you know, not gonna equate to plus 70 wins, but what you want is not only a manager that can help a team start to learn how to win, but let's be honest, Will Venable was hired to teach a team how to somewhat lose gracefully, right? Because we know that this team is going to do a lot of losing. So Will Venable is a guy that's going to have to help them walk through those losing ways and try to get to the winning ways. And I thought that Will Venable was a great get for the White Sox. Again, we are also talking Bears this evening. Judson Richards along with you until 9 o'clock this evening. We are asking you on Election Day, what is your approval rating for Bears head coach Matt Eberflus? A number of ways you can do it. We've been taking phone calls all evening, 312-644-6767. Also, we are using the new feature. There is a voice messaging feature. Did you know this? Available on the Odyssey app. It allows you to record and send a message directly to the station. If you do not want to do it live, you can do it through the app. We'll collect those. If we can get some, we'll run them back to you, coming back in the 8 o'clock hour. Again, what does Matt Eberflus need to do to be back in 2025? We'll continue to tackle that throughout the show. Let's go to San Antonio, Texas now. Score Baseball Insider Bruce Levine joins us this evening. Bruce, how is Texas treating you?
Good, Judson. We had a near flood yesterday, last night, where they were telling us we couldn't leave the hotel because there were extreme thunder and thunder showers and tornadoes in the area, and they told us there was going to be a flood, but we escaped it, and we're back here at the hotel today. Both Chris Getz of the Chicago White Sox and, of course, Judd Hoyer, the general manager of the Cubs, president and general manager of the Cubs, here to try to talk some trades, try to make some things sense out of the free agent market, and where would you like to begin tonight?
Well, Bruce, you know, I understand it's not necessarily typical for managers to be at these things, right? But it sounds like Chris Getz, GM, invited manager Will Venable to be at the GM meetings.
So I talked to Will Venable last night, and he said, this is something that I thought would be a good idea since all the executives were going to be down here, and Getz has five of his top lieutenants down here, assistant general managers, head of pitching, director of hitting that they just hired as well. So Venable, being the smart guy he is, says, well, this will give us all a head start to be in the same place and get to know each other better for 3 or 4 days down in Texas. So Getz thought it was a good idea and agreed, and that's what they've been doing here since they got here yesterday.
Bruce, much discussion at the meetings about any surprise that Cody Bellinger opted back in with the Cubs?
I think they were surprised because the free agent market, you know, after Juan Soto, there's some good players, but, you know, outside of a couple of impact players, we were all thinking, the Cubs were thinking too, that Bellinger, you know, at age 29, would opt out to try to get something a little bit better than the $30 million he's making this year and $20 million he makes in 2026 with another option. Now, that's a lot of money in real people money, but in baseball players' money, there was a thought that he could get a four-year deal for $100 million out there in the marketplace. But he decided to come back, and, you know, knowing that the market last year was way down, and it took up until almost spring training to get a deal done with the Cubs last year, the RSN issues out there impacting a lot of teams spending money, they weren't going to gamble away his $30 million for this year.
So what do you think is going to come next on the north side? Is it more likely that there's a big free agent signing for the Cubs, or is it more likely that Jed Hoyer is going to part with some of his talent down on the farm, or even some of his younger talent on his big league club?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question, and one that they're going up and back with right now. They're looking at free agency, and, you know, the Cubs had that dreadful period in May and June where they didn't score any runs. They came back, and they were a pretty good offense the last couple of months of the year. So it's up to Hoyer and general manager Carter Hawkins to figure out exactly where they need to strengthen the team. Is it a good enough offensive team, even though it's lacking a star in the lineup? Or because Wrigley Field played so big last year and yielded the second fewest home runs in its history, were the lack of offense something that they pay attention to, or the fact that their pitchers got away with more because the ballpark played that big? I think they're leaning toward the pitcher part, and I think, even though I don't think it's going to be a Corbin Burnes, I think they're going to be interested in trying to bring in another starting pitcher to fortify their pitching staff and solidify what was a strength for them in 2024.
Yeah, other big names, Blake Snell, Max Fried, available as well. We're joined by Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine. He is in San Antonio at the GM meetings. Bruce, I've got a pretty good idea about what would help the Cubs offensively. There's this guy named Juan Soto that I think he's coming off a pretty good season. He's at age 25. Is this the next $600 million man in baseball?
Well, that's if Scott Boras, who's the super agent in baseball, will be talking here at the meetings tomorrow in the morning. And that's what we'll be quizzing him about. Obviously, the Yankees appear to be the front runners, having had him last year after making a trade and him being the MVP of the league this side of his teammate. I would say that they're going to probably push really hard to bring him back. Now, is it $500 million? Is it $600 million? How many teams out there can afford that for a player, $45 to $50 million a year? Are the Cubs in that category of spending money with the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, possibly Toronto and San Francisco? It's down to, it won't be more than five markets, maybe six if you put Philadelphia in there, but that's a ton of money for one hitter. Would it change the dynamic of the Cubs? Absolutely. It would change the dynamic of any lineup in Major League Baseball. The question is, when you're using that much of your payroll for one guy, what's left to substantially fortify the rest of the team when you need to make some moves. In other words, you're looking at an era right now where benches, and particularly the Cubs bench last year, which was awful, no offense to the players, but they just weren't of top caliber. After general managers and presidents of baseball organizations get done paying big chunks of money to pitchers and big-time hitters, there's not that money for the middle-range player left. So then when they have injuries, you're dealing with players that aren't ready to play in the major leagues. And that's the question that general managers and owners of teams have to ask themselves when they put $45 or $50 million a year toward one player.
Bruce, what do you think White Sox GM, what sort of plans does Chris Getz have this offseason? How much money are they willing to spend to bolster that roster?
Not a lot. Okay, there won't be a lot of money spent by the White Sox. What they're going to do is they're going to try to trade, make great trades, and bring in position players. He talked today about the fact that they fortified their pitching staff last year in trades. Now, if they do trade Garrett Crochet, they're going to need three or four good position players back in a deal. So they're targeting, whether it's a trade with Crochet or Robert or a free agency at some level, and they won't be spending a lot of money, they're targeting better offense. They had probably historically one of the worst offenses in the history of the game to go along with their 121 losses, which we all know was a record for Major League Baseball. So they need to seriously step it up when it comes to the offense. And if Crochet is dealt, you're going to see three top position players come back to the Chicago White Sox.
Bruce, any fine dining happening in San Antonio over these GM meetings?
I just finished a half a bag of unsalted cashews. Does that qualify?
Stop spoiling yourself. I hope that's not on the company dime, Bruce.
No. I mean, that's, you know, Mitch told me I couldn't eat here. So, you know, but, you know, it's great being here and setting the GM meetings as the start of the year. Obviously, very few trades ever get done here, but agents are here talking to teams, and the White Sox, Chris Getz said that he's had an awful lot of discussions already with teams about Garrett Crochet. So we'll be watching that here over the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks going into the winter meetings in Dallas on December 9th. That'll be maybe a culmination for a trade for Crochet. Certainly the Cubs are going to look to be making some deals. Cubs have, they're in a little better position as far as money goes. They don't have a ton to spend in free agency, but they have a lot of young players that just don't have any spots available to them because of the position players that are locked into contracts with the Cubs. So we'll see how it shakes out.
Bruce, thanks for your time. We'll be keeping up, see what happens at these GM meetings, and of course we get in a hot stove. Thanks,
welcome,
Bruce,
to our airwaves. You sound wonderful.
Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate that.
Sir.
Thanks so much. Bruce Levine with us on 670 The Score, the Score Baseball Insider. Garrett Crochet, yeah, it sounds like he may be on the move. Cody Bellinger is here, and we'll have to see what else happens this offseason. Hey, this Sunday, join The Score and Circus Sports Illinois at Jared Payton's flagship on the Fox in St. Charles. Molly, Olin Kreutz, and Patrick Manley will host our pregame show there from 9 to noon, then have immediate reaction on the postgame show after Chicago takes on the New England Patriots. That's this Sunday at flagship on the Fox in St. Charles, sponsored by Circus Sports Illinois. Sporting betting the way it should be. Is Caleb Williams regressing? I'd like to talk about that word, too. Regression. Is Caleb Williams regressing? We will dive into that coming up next on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
With you on a Tuesday night, election night. Hope you got a chance to get out there and do your civic duty. Coming up at 8 o'clock, the pride of Joliet, Illinois, Mark Grant will join us. One of the best duos in baseball in the booth, along with Don Orsillo Mark Grant had a chance to cover Will Venable when he was with the San Diego Padres. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the new manager of the White Sox. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. We are talking plenty of Bears as well, 312-644-6767. I got to say that there's this word that is circulating, Caleb Williams. I'm admittedly somewhat frustrated by it. And Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, I find X stupid. So Twitter, they know your algorithm, right? They know that anytime I see something Caleb Williams related, I'm probably going to spend a longer time looking at it. And so I was getting all the hot takes that were coming down Monday, right? From all the national shows everywhere. And I keep hearing that word regression, 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 regression. And I first of all, I don't remember this much celebration for a guy who had 72% completion percentage over that three-game winning streak. So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves about how far a guy, you know why you may not have seen that much celebrating is because he was maybe five games into his NFL career. Okay, so now we're eight games into his NFL career. So I was listening to Mullenhaw this morning, and Brad Biggs. Biggsy is feeling the exact same way that I am about that word regression.
I think you can point to many things. Obviously, the offensive line and protection is a big issue. But Caleb Williams, for whatever reason, the last 2 weeks in his regression has ignored, neglected, not been asked to throw to the tight end. I can't believe that Cole Kmet has been a guy that has one target over the last two games. That, to me, is as much of a problem as anything in the passing game. Because you have a guy, we could argue if you want about DJ Moore's touches and Keenan Allen's targets, but I think it starts with having a safety valve tight end that you trust and can be used in the quick passing game and also on third downs where they're bad. What's the easiest explanation, Brad, why Cole Kmet has been ignored the last two games?
Yeah, I don't think there's an easy explanation. And I don't know, you know, I wouldn't say that Caleb Williams has regressed the last 2 weeks because the way I think of the word is it's like, well, he's headed down now. Like it's going downhill from here. And he's had two games that haven't been good.
Okay.
There's no question about that, but I don't know if regression's the word I'd use.
I don't know. I don't know, Brad. I certainly think that Brad and I could have discussions about when or when we should not use the word regression. I'll remind you, this is a true rookie, eight games into his NFL season, eight games in with the most difficult position in sports that he's asked to do. And by the way, he's asked to do it with an offensive coordinator who seems to be in over his head, an offensive line that may be on their 10th, 11th, 12th guy that may not. Some of these guys may not be on rosters if they didn't have as many injuries as the Bears have currently, including not having his starting right tackle, his best offensive lineman in Darnell Wright, and he didn't have Braxton Jones either. So he is climbing an uphill battle while also being very, very new at the most difficult thing to do in sports. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve criticism. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be picked through with a fine-tooth comb. But the word regression, for a guy who is as young as he is and as new as he is at a very, very difficult position, I think we need to slow down on that word a little bit. But also, when you use a regression, that means that he's had to have gone backwards, which means that he's doing well. So all those things that could be considered. And nationally, Alex, you tell me if you agree. Nationally, I do feel like there's this underlying current that we, I think people that consume sports like this, that we just kind of root for Buss a little bit, right? Like,
yes.
Do you get that sense?
Especially with the way that they hyped him up, comparing him to Patrick Mahomes before he played a single NFL game.
Yeah.
It's like, build him up so we can come back after eight games and say, oh, he's not living up to expectations.
Right. Now, I will say, in a lot of these conversations, acknowledged is Shane Waldron failing his young quarterback, even Ryan Poles, the general manager, not building an offensive line, and overall not building a strong enough run game where they are asked. I mean, he threw the ball 50-some times in one game this year. That immediately, I don't care how good you are in college or no matter how potentially polished you are, it just isn't going to work. And so this word regression, I think we need to be careful when we think about playing the game of, oh man, this is going in a really, really bad way. And even bringing up the past when it comes to Bears quarterbacks, because I understand the history. I understand the past. You have never had a quarterback with the ability of Caleb Williams. And I think he's going to have to work through some stuff, right? And that's why you're playing him right now.
He has to work through some stuff. And I remember just before the draft, we had Kyron Samuels, who covers USC and Oregon for SI, played ball at Jacksonville State. And what he said is, you're going to love Caleb, but you have got to have patience.
Right.
And if you watched him in college, you saw a very good player. But I think a lot of people were like, are you seriously comparing him to Patrick Mahomes already? And acting like he's just this polished, ready for the NFL. Not that he's not ready for the NFL, but people were acting like he didn't have anything to learn. Like there was going to be no learning curve. And that never made any sense at all.
You know what comparison I want my quarterback to have to Patrick Mahomes, besides all the Super Bowls? Early on in Patrick Mahomes' career, there was a game against the Texans in the playoffs where they fell down by 21 points early on. And the cameras caught Patrick Mahomes going up and down that sideline with his offensive linemen, his wide receivers, his entire offense, telling them that they were going to come back and they were going to win that game. Right? Patrick Mahomes has an incredible, incredible ability to not quit or not give up on any certain play, including begging to get back into the game one time with an ankle injury. My favorite game so far for Caleb Williams, it's not in that three-game winning streak. So far, my favorite game for Caleb Williams was the loss to the Houston Texans, because that man got close to murdered on the football field, and they had a chance to go and win it at the very end. This is what you're building on. That word patience that you used is much more important than the word regression. Not saying he doesn't deserve criticism, but I'm saying context matters. 8 games into a 17-game season, he is not halfway through his rookie year as a true rookie trying to figure this thing out. Which, by the way, do you know how many true rookies would love to be 4-4? Now, I don't envy them heading into the NFC North as of now and the rest of the season that they have in front of them. But I just want to say, slow down a little bit on regression. Good on you, Brad Biggs, for calling it out this morning. And we'll continue to see how he continues to grow, even as the struggles that he's working through. Because oftentimes, these struggles, these shortcomings, these failures is how good quarterbacks and hopefully great quarterbacks continue to get better even through the tough times. 312-644-6767. We have been asking you on election night, give us your approval ratings of head coach Matt Eberflus. We're taking your phone calls. Also, check out the Odyssey app and a chance to leave a voice message. If you don't want to talk to me live on air, that's fine. The voice message, a new feature available on that Odyssey app, allows you to record and send a message directly to the station. Plenty more Bears coverage coming up. Also, what kind of new manager do the White Sox have in Will Venable? We'll discuss coming up next.